This is the Race Like a Girl podcast, where you always get a one-of-a-kind RC talk experience from the female perspective. Our motto is to always strive to beat the guys. So without further ado, here are your fuel-burning, four-wheel drive-turning hosts, Katie and Mackenzie.
Everybody, welcome to the Race Like a Girl podcast. We are excited to bring our first official episode out to you guys in 2022. I know it's been a little while since you've heard from us, so we're excited to finally release some content out to you guys. And, you know, I feel like I say this every year, but my New Year's resolution this year is once again to try to bring some more content out to you guys. So hopefully we can live up to that this year. But without further ado, we are going to bring you an SIC episode for sure, but we've also got some catching up to do with Katie Roxbury. So, hey, Katie, welcome to the Race Like a Girl podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me on. I'm so excited to be here. I think, like, every time we talk on the track or over Facebook or whatever, it may be on the podcast, like, we have really good chemistry with talking. So I think this is so cool. I feel like this is going to really take off, and that's awesome.
So the listeners are going to get a Katie show tonight. I feel like before we get into SIC, there is a lot of catching up that we need to do since the last episode that we chatted about. One thing is that it's no longer the Katie HB duo. You've officially made your switch to techno. But even before I talk about that, you've also made a really big move. So I want to start there and talk about what your experience was like moving and just kind of tell us what it's like to live with two guys now.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Like, I've had experiences with roommates before and living with family. And before, I currently am residing in Texas, and we moved from the Midwest up in like Iowa and Pennsylvania. And I kind of like moved all over up there. And, Jared and I, we kind of agreed a little previous, like before we moved, maybe about a year before we moved, we kind of agreed that Texas would be a good spot if we were to like move in together or move somewhere together. Just because the racing scene down here is so huge, and like the following, especially like the RC community, is huge. And there's so many different types of tracks down here, like in Austin and in Houston and Dallas, which is where we currently are. And like the types of conditions that we have in Dallas specifically are just very different from each other. And it would be a huge learning experience. So we moved down here, I think in May or April of last year. I think it was after Silver State. We moved in with our buddy Tyler, and they both run techno. They have been running techno since like I can remember, like since they were like, they've been on techno for like a decade. I don't even know. And there was a lot of racers out there that were asking me, when are you going to switch? When are you going to switch? Or are you going to switch? Or who's going to do the switch? Is Jared going to go to HB, or am I going to go to techno? And I feel like it was kind of inevitable that one of us would switch. And I think it, you know, it was more me than him that would be switching. And so this year I had been offered a really good deal that I couldn't pass up, and I was extremely influenced already by living with two techno drivers. I was like, I should give this a shot. And so I made the switch this year. My first race was SIC with the new cars, and before that we went to two or three tracks in Texas to test the cars and make sure that I felt comfortable with them and getting a good setup. And I feel great with the cars. I feel like the HB, I drove that for 5 years, and it was something that was very familiar to me. I could work on it with no problems. I mean, any car is the basic stuff is about the same throughout. But as far as setup wise, I didn't feel very confident in setting up my car on my own. And the team support down here in Texas wasn't, you know, it's not that big. But the techno support that I'd have, having Jared being like the prototype developer type guy, and then also Tyler, who is also a professional driver, like both of them are, they're really good with setting up these cars. And I felt like I had a really good chance at progressing in my RC career, quote unquote. And so I had to give it a chance.
So you touched on a lot of things there that I want to hit. The first one is you talked about how it was inevitable that one of you was going to switch. So I have to say that even though I'm super sad that you no longer run for HB, because it's no secret that Dave and I aren't going anywhere as far as HB goes, that I understand it, because when Dave and I first started racing, we both had short courses and we kind of both moved to e-buggy from short courses. And when we moved to e-buggy, we both, I think he had a brand new e-buggy, but I just kind of bought a used one from someone. Mm-hmm. And so when we started running e-buggy, we ran two separate brands for a very long time. He actually ran Techno and I ran Associated. It was hard. And those were back in the days. I mean, we're talking like almost 8 years ago now, that I really wasn't as skilled or knowledgeable as I am wrenching right now, or like setup or any of those things, because I was basically a brand new racer at that time. And so it was hard. It was hard for so many reasons. The first major big one was having two separate parts. So all of the parts that we had, he had to have spare parts for the Techno and I had to have spare parts for the Associated. And it was a lot to have two of everything. When you're running the same car, you can just have, you know, one spare and just replace it when the two of you break something. So parts was a huge thing. But beyond that, if I was struggling with the car, I'd be like, you know, hey, what should I do or what should I change? And he'd be like, I don't know, I'm driving a Techno, you're driving an Associated. Like, I have no idea what to change on your car. Mm-hmm. So especially for that reason too, it was pretty challenging in that way as well. So although I hate that you left HB, I understand it, because it was hard for Dave and I to do all that.
Yeah, I didn't know that you guys, I know you guys right now as HB team drivers, and you guys are an excellent husband and wife team. Like, it's insane. And I didn't know your background with each other and like with racing. And I think it's really cool to finally learn that, like, he was racing Techno at one point, you were racing Associated, and you understand me. You understand, like, the situation that I was in. And you're exactly right. It got to the point where I was kind of just stuck with my cars, where, yeah, I could get them okay, but they were kind of like a mediocre setup that worked sort of good here and, like, really good there and not good at all here, you know, and I just didn't know what to change on them. And he could help me with basic setup stuff, like maybe, you know, sway bars or shock oils or diff oils or, you know, just stuff that translates. And with the Technos that we drive now, he's able to just look at my car on the track and know exactly what to change, when to change it. A great example is yesterday. We had a club race at Indy yesterday. Indy RC World, self-promo, shameless self-promo, but that's where I work down here in Texas. And we were doing a club race there yesterday, and there were super fast guys. Like, as soon as I walked in, I was like, there's some really good competition here. Like, I don't know. And we came in a little bit late after practice started. I had one run on the track, and my car just did not feel good. It felt, you know, the setup wasn't right. I changed a few things coming back from SIC, but it wasn't enough changes, and I was just frustrated. And so I went back to the pit, and Jared and I talked it out, and eventually, like, I just decided to change a few things and get it okay. And my e-buggy was really good. Like, my e-buggy was so good. I ended up getting a fourth place podium for that one. And then I did make both A-main, so that was nice, even though my nitro buggy wasn't that great. But we stayed, I think racing went from 1:30 to about 8:30, and we stayed until midnight testing the car. He was helping me for hours, just, you know, getting a base setup that worked at Indy really well. And by the end of the night, I had gained a second and a half on my lap times. It was difficult for me to drive the car earlier that day. And we just got it so good at the end of the night that it was just mind blowing to me to have, you know, have the support that I do now and being able to be confident in my driving and also being confident in my car. That was a huge part of it.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever talked about how Dave and I ran different brands on the podcast, but that's how we started before we were sponsored. Our first sponsorship was Mugen. So once we went to Mugen, we both have been running the same cars ever since then. But mm-hmm. It is a huge advantage, whether it's you or someone that you're working with, to really know and understand the car. And it's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why we're still running HB, because Dave especially, I mean, I feel like I'm pretty knowledgeable at this point, way better than I used to be. But Dave especially, like, really knows that car inside and out. So it's hard to just, you know, pick up and start over, even though there are a lot of guys who switch during silly season. I give them kudos, because I feel like there are some growing pains when you go from one car to another car, just because you have to learn all of those things that don't translate. Like you were talking about how something like shock oils or diff oils might, but there are certain things that maybe don't. Mm-hmm. So you talked about testing. So mm-hmm. I'll go there for a minute. Is there anything specific that you did with Techno specifically that you feel like really improved your car and helped you find that time?
In terms of like the specific setup changes and testing that I did yesterday?
Or just any time since you've had the car, like mm-hmm. what have you tested or done different or tried that Jared has helped you with to make your car faster? I know if we talk about yesterday, we're talking about Indy, you know, mm-hmm. Indy track conditions specifically at that point. Mm-hmm. But just what are the things that you've tried and how have you seen it improve your car?
Going back to like my HB cars, I didn't really know anything about setup. I think it's because I didn't have the support. So even though somebody would make a suggestion to change things, I never had that one-on-one time to help me understand why I need to make certain changes and why, you know, certain things need to be done. But for Techno, when I switched over, Jared immediately like dove in and was teaching me how things work, what happens when I change this and what happens when I change that. And we went out on the track at multiple tracks at like Thornhill or Indy or A1, and we would change, he would suggest making a change based off of looking on my car or driving my car. And I would ask him why. I would say, why, what would this do on the car? For example, at Indy, we run higher diffs. We run like diff fluids. We run shock oils, depend on weather as well. But we went up like 100 in weight from SIC to Indy, just because Indy's a little bit tighter, and because of it being high grip, it's sort of smooth, a little bit bumpy. We went up in sway bars. The diffs is the same thing. It's super high grip, so you had to go up in diffs. Sway bars and anti-squat were a huge thing that were like basic stuff, but it really helped the car. Like sway bars helped keep the car more stable in high grip conditions, and then the anti-squat helped with drive on a high grip track. Yesterday, some of the things we had tested specifically for Indy yesterday were spindles. Like I felt like the steering was really aggressive in the front for me. It was just really, the car was kind of tippy as well. Like it wasn't very stable. It was kind of like back and forth, left to right. And we had changed shock wheels, and I think that helped a lot too. It made it a little bit more stable, so we went up 100 weight. And then the spindles, we went from 0-degree spindles to the 5-degree ones, and that helped a lot with smoothing out the car. Another thing that is a huge thing to pay attention to at any track really is tires. Tires is 80 to 90% of the time the issues that people are having. If they don't have correct tires, then they're not going to be able to get around comfortably on the track, even with a good setup on the car. So yesterday we were running super soft long wear double downs all the way around. And those were good, but they were a little bit aggressive. Like the steering especially was aggressive for me. And that was the one thing that I was mainly fighting too, was that it was just really twitchy. So we went to super soft longwire zip downs. So the steering from front to back and like all the way around the apex of the turn, it became smoother. And it wasn't like the front of my car was erratic and all over the place, if that makes sense. But it was just like small things that we ended up changing that made a huge difference in the end. I could push my car harder. I didn't have to be as careful. I noticed that I drove a friend's car and his setup was good. And then we went over to my car and I was like, okay, well, this is how my car is different from his right now. And Jared was like, okay, I never tested things like this because I just never thought about it. But we'll try this on your car and see if you like it better. So generally, we run a pretty good and even setup throughout both of our cars. But there's just certain things that I need to change for my driving style. Like he is extremely on power and just like railing around the entire track. And I'm not really on full power all the time. I use the mid a lot. And I think I get that habit from my e-buggy because I need to be a little bit smoother for my e-buggy. But yeah, we just changed a few things that were kind of like outside the box that Jared has never thought about. And I thought that was pretty interesting because I get his brain going too. But yeah, I can't think of anything other setup changes. I know that from like SIC to Indy, two different, completely different tracks, and sway bars and anti-squat were the two main things that we needed to change, along with a few other small things.
So I'll definitely ditto the tire comment about, you know, making sure your tires are good before you really should even get into that other stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that I do when I'm practicing. So like we'll take SIC, for example, since that's where we were at last. If after my first run on the track, if I feel some sort of way about my car, whether I feel like there's a push or the car's really loose before I go to any kind of setup change, I always go to my tires first. And so before I make any changes to the car, my next run, I'll change the tires just to see how the tires felt different from one particular treader compound to the other and see if that's what I'm feeling in the car before I try to change something else. Especially if I know that I'll take SIC, for example, again. So SIC, especially when the track was what it was on Friday when we were practicing, the track was not very gripped up and was pretty loose, actually, or slimy, you could even use maybe to describe it. And so I knew that I was on soft springs and my sway bars were pretty low, just about as low as they could go. And so I knew that in general, my setups, whether we're talking about springs or shocks or diffs or sway bars, were pretty close to where they needed to be for a loose style track. So that's why I would say, okay, let me change a tire, whether it be tread or compound, just to see where the car is at and what is fastest before I make changes from there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think some people just have a certain set of tires, or they think based off of like the conditions, which is another thing that you should do, is like based off the conditions, think about what tires would work there and what compounds. And then when you're testing, some people have the habit of changing the car around the tires to get the tires to work. And that's not the way that you should be doing it. You should be testing tires first with your car, seeing which one goes around the best and seeing which one you feel most comfortable with, and then play with the setup of your car after that to see if you can improve on the setup. Another thing is that whenever you change something on your car, you shouldn't be changing tires in the middle of that either, just because having different compounds and set, you know, treads of tires can mess with the testing of certain parts as well. So whenever I try to test some things on the car like we were doing yesterday, I used the same set of tires the entire time to make sure that what I was testing and what I was feeling on the car was for sure from the changes I was making for setup and not because I was running a different set of tires.
The other thing that stood out to me, what you said, is that, you know, Jared and I are close, but we're not exact setup. I would definitely say the same for Dave and I, and it is similar to what you're explaining. I am a more mild, more mild driver than Dave. He's pretty full punched, like you're explaining Jared is. And so that does cause some differences in our driving style. I always used to like a car that had a push too, because I felt like if the car had a push, I could drive it pretty hard. I've since gone away from that a little bit because I am starting to understand that the looser a car is, the faster it's going to be to drive, as long as you understand that and kind of just teach yourself to drive the car the way it is. So I have been trying to get out of my comfort zone with that a little bit more. I will say that. But yeah, we still differ in some ways. And I will say I'm going to go ahead and give him a kudo to his knowledge versus my knowledge, because there are several times where we actively decided to do something different. And I'll say, I almost want to say 9 out of 10, but maybe I'll give myself a little bit of grace here and I'll say 8 out of 10. His change was better than my change. There are a lot of times where I should have listened to him, but I still did my own thing anyways.
Yeah, that actually makes me think of yesterday when I was telling you about testing that our friend's car on the track and like feeling the differences between his car and my car. His car had a push like you were talking about, and I could drive it harder around the track. And I felt more comfortable with it. I could be more consistent with it. But whenever we made the changes to my car, it was still edgy, but not as edgy as it was before in terms of steering. And it didn't have the push that his car had. But my fast lap with his car was only like a 26-something. And created a new fast lap the entire day at the end of the night when we made like the final changes at a 24.1. So I was a solid second and a half faster with my car than I was with his car. I felt like I could push the car harder with his, if that makes sense, but it wasn't necessarily faster. So I totally understand what you mean by that.
It accurately describes what I feel like I've been learning. When I feel the best is not always the fastest, and so I kind of have to let that go and just understand that a loose car is fast, even if it feels like I'm not going faster on the track.
Yeah, and I think that's a common thing just in RCE in general, and like even among the pro guys when they talk, that you could feel really good with your car, but it's not as fast as you think it is. Because there's been a few times where Jared would be like, oh, this is a great lap, and it would come by and it's like just like an average lap like he normally has, but it's because there was something that he changed prior that he felt better with, but it wasn't necessarily faster. So whenever you get like on that top pro level, it's really interesting to drive his car because it's very aggressive and it's very on edge, but he drives it so good and like he can just go fast with an edgy car. And I think that's really impressive.
Definitely is. And I do hear similarities even when I drive Dave's car versus my car. I feel similar when I do that. Let's move back to techno. So you switched to techno. What are you most excited about when it comes to running techno this year?
I am most excited to learn more about myself and my driving and learn more about setup, because I feel like with my HB cars, because of not having the support around me that I believe I could have had, was I think I had a mental block as well, thinking, oh, I'm stuck. Oh, I can't really go anywhere. And I wouldn't retain information very, very well. But I feel like I've learned a lot even over the last couple of months with testing the new car, that I can think about the changes that I did for certain tracks like a month ago, and before I couldn't even retain information. I'd have to go back and look up, you know, on a setup sheet, or if I didn't make a setup sheet, I just genuinely wouldn't know what I did. So I think I'm most excited to learn and progress in my driving and setup and all that stuff. And I think having that one-on-one time with Jared is a huge part of that.
I feel like we do have similarities in those goals too, because although I have learned a lot, I feel like there's still a ways to go, especially when it comes to wrenching and setup. And so we do have similar goals there. But now that you run the same car as Jared, I know you're pretty self-sufficient because you had to be self-sufficient when you were on the HB, but is it more stressful, less stressful, more difficult, less difficult? And is there any kind of balance or boundaries that you guys have to set when you're at the track between you and Jared now that you are running the same car as him? Like, I'll give you an example for Dave and I. When we go to a race, I completely understand that he's there to race for himself too. So like, if something needs to be done on his car, that kind of takes precedence to any wrenching that I like may not be able to do by myself. Like, one of the things that I'm totally not self-sufficient on is soldering. Like, I would actively need, actually it's more of, I wouldn't trust my soldering. It would benefit me and my electronics to wait for his soldering because it's just more reliable than what I could do with the soldering gun. So that's just an example I'm throwing out there. But is it more difficult, less difficult? Are you finding that you have to set boundaries now that you're on the same team running the same car?
I think we've always had those sort of boundaries, even though we weren't running the same car. I understand that his, you know, his level of racing is extremely important, you know, a priority over mine, especially on the bigger like national events. So that we kind of already had kind of set in stone. When it comes to like parts as well, I have a set of parts for myself. He has a set of parts for himself. You know, we have pretty basic stuff. We have our own stash. We have our own OGOs. We have all that stuff that like we, yes, there's certain stuff that we share. Sometimes if I don't have like enough of a certain oil, like I can take from his and vice versa. Like we share things pretty well, but it's just kind of a respect thing having, you know, my own stuff and he has his own stuff and not really having to rely on him if I don't have to. I think I'm pretty self-sufficient in the sense that I am very comfortable with working on my own stuff. All I have to do is like ask him if I need to change anything or what he suggests me changing. Like the changes that we made yesterday on my car, I did 90% of them, except putting the spindles on. Spindles I didn't really know how to change, and it was a new car, so he did that stuff. But we were also like, it was a test day, and he offered to help me with that stuff. But yeah, I'd say whenever we, for example, when we went to SIC, we had kind of a plan in place where, yes, even though it was my first race with the new cars, he was still priority, you know, because this is his job. And so our friend Dylan, who lives south of us, was going to that event as well. And we had a local here at Indy going to SIC as well. So we were all coordinating with one another, like pitting for each other, helping, you know, marshal for each other if we needed it. I wasn't really relying on Jared. I could do stuff, you know, pretty much on my own. And that was nice too. And I have a picture that I want to send you of the soldering job that I did because I'm really proud of it. I just sent it to you. We were testing, or I was learning how to solder in Indy because our shop guys are really good at working on pretty much everything. And they're like professional solders. Like it just blows my mind. And so he had pulled up like a little bullet and taught me how to solder. And I did this soldering job on my e-buggy all by myself at home. And I was so proud. And it's funny because Jared was like tooting my horn and was like, Katie did this and it looks good and I'm impressed. And I was like, yay.
It looks way better than I could do. That's for one. For two, I love that it's the teak and pink wire. We'll post it when we post this episode. And so the listeners will be able to see what we're talking about too, even though they might not understand at first. But that is really good. I am definitely impressed because that is an area of weakness of mine for sure.
Thank you. It was very nerve-wracking too because that was the first time that I actually did every bit of solder myself. So Jared would try to chime in and take it from me, but I was like, no, I want to learn.
All right. So One more thing before we move on to talking about some of our experiences at SIC is I want to touch on your move a little bit because I think it's interesting how now that you live in Texas, you actually have a job and work for Indy as well. So I want to get into that a little bit. So when you moved, did you already kind of have the job that you have now at Indy lined up? Or is it one of those things where you moved and you were looking for a job? So Indy's one of the first places you looked? Or how did that all come about? And for any listeners that don't know what you do at Indy, could you just explain a little bit about what your job is or what you do at Indy RC World?
Yeah. So when we moved down here, I was in management and retail beforehand, and I had been working in retail since I was 17. Like, it was kind of just old news, and I was kind of over it. And I've been involved in RC since I was 11 years old. I'm 24 now, and I've been involved in RC since I was 11 years old. And I always thought that there was something more to just racing for fun and as a hobby for me. I knew that there was something that needed to, you know, I needed to make this something else for myself. And it's really motivating having Jared, who is, you know, he works for Techno. He's the prototype tester developer for Techno. He's also a paid professional driver. Like, he does this for a living. And then we also have our other roommate, or our roommate, Tyler, who works at Techno, Live RC, J Concepts, like all these companies that he does like social media for. He also works for Indy, actually, for the RC Pro series, the traveling series that we have. For both their off-road and oval series. So he's already been involved in all that. And I think it was really motivating to find something with that. And I had put myself out there a few times. I started making YouTube videos. So I was thinking of like social media. I, you know, was active on Facebook and Instagram for my own, you know, RC racing, for a while, and still am. And I was working, I just got a job at Target when we moved down here, and because it paid $15 an hour, and I was like, cool, I mean, I can, you know, sustain my RC career off of this. I can live in our house together and, you know, pay for the bills and pay for my RC as well. So it was sort of just like whatever helps me race RC cars. And that was a huge thing too. When I got that job, I was like, am I able to take off time to go to these races? Because if not, I'll go somewhere else. I just think it's, for me, it's so important to have RC in my life. It's been a huge like relief in my mind as well with occupying myself with it. And so I had that for, I'd say, just the first couple of months after we moved here. And then a spot opened up at Indy for their social media manager / race manager promoter. So I had connections with Jared, and I had connections with a couple people at the track, and Ty asked me to come in for an interview. And we sat down and talked, and he loved the passion that I had for RC, and that, you know, the drive that I had to get Indy to a spot that it's never been at before. And also Indy was struggling at the time because this was shortly after COVID, and, you know, still mid COVID, and there was a huge hit to not only everybody in the world in the US with like jobs and stuff and hobbies and everything and sports, but it was a huge hit for RC as well, because we just couldn't be around each other to race. So Indy shut down for a little while during COVID. And when we came back, there were some structural things, you know, that I feel like I could have used my experience to improve on with everybody there. And I think that a huge thing that was missing there was a good teamwork dynamic. And when I had shown up, I immediately was thrown into planning for Lone Star, which is the second biggest race of the year for us. It's December 3rd through the 5th this past year. And I had gotten hired in, I can't remember. It might've been August. So immediately when I got hired, I had done social media changes for, you know, the better for Indy. I had within a week of being there, I was resolving issues that had, you know, had been there since 2 years prior. I was planning for Lone Star, and it took me 3 months, I believe, 3 to 4 months to plan for Lone Star. And so what I do is I plan and coordinate and promote events that we host, that we have at Indy. So with Lone Star, I had to get, you know, drivers out here. I had to promote the hobby. I had to promote that this is a, we have a cap of 250 entries, and we had sponsors lined up, and I had to create like a sponsorship proposal to send out to these companies so that they would be able to support, you know, Lone Star and offer raffle items. And we had t-shirts made and plaques made and trophies and all that stuff. And throughout all of this planning, I'm, you know, 3 months of planning, and the weekend comes around, race weekend comes around, and I'm just like so stressed in my head. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is my first promoting gig. Like I'm so nervous, but I'm so excited at the same time. And we get there, and on top of this, I decided to run two classes. So I'm being like pulled in one direction from the other, and, you know, practicing and racing. And it was one of the most fun experiences I've ever had. Even though it was stressful, it was super fun to be able to have the ability to make changes for the better. So I think one thing that some promoters in general just have a struggle with is that they want to make every racer happy, which is very hard as a promoter, because if you do one thing, somebody's going to be unhappy about it. But if you do the person that, if you do something that the unhappy person wants done, then this other person gets unhappy about it. So it's just, you can't make everyone happy, and you just have to stick to your word and be firm. And so one thing that I was learning that weekend was that, you know, get a schedule made, get the roast program made, don't allow any more of the cap entries that we have, you know, allow heat fillers so that we have the max amount of entries. And it was just this really cool event by the end of the weekend that after everything was said and done, I was looking back on it. I'm like, wow, this wasn't too bad. And it was a huge reward to have, you know, longtime racers at Indy come up to me and say, this was a really good event. You did really good. It was one of the most organized events that we've had in a long time. And, you know, you did great. We're thankful to have you. And it was a huge reassurance type thing, saying like, okay, well, all this preparation and time was so worth it in the end. And now, after Lone Star is done, we have huge things coming in 2022. We have what we call the Indy RC Grand Prix, and that's a huge, it's an all-year series, which consists of three different series in that series. So it's kind of like a Grand Prix. There's different series. So this one is like a winter chill series that's coming up, and there's three races, one race every single month. And it just adds up in the end where we pick like an overall winner between all of the series points that all gets added up. And we have like this banquet that's going to be happening in the beginning of the year or at the end of the year, whichever we choose is best. And we have our oval series too, because we not only do off-road racing for 8-scale and 10-scale, but we also do oval racing. So I have that series going on. So all the planning that I'm doing currently are a winter oval series, an off-road oval series, a big race called Icebreaker, which is our biggest race of the year, like our number one biggest race of the year. So I'm planning on and setting up hotels for pro drivers that are coming out, and I'm setting, you know, getting everything lined up for promoting the event. And we already actually have a couple of our plaques that just arrived yesterday for the series races. And it's a ton of things that are going on. And on top of this, I'm also controlling the social media. So I'm posting every single day, multiple times a day on the Facebook page and the Instagram page. And now we have a TikTok that I just made a few days ago. So on top of that, I'm doing that too. So it's like this whole thing, but it's basically race manager, promoter, and also I have to be there on race days. So whenever I'm there on race days, I, you know, help out with the race program. And if anybody needs help, I'm there. If there's a conflict in the pits, then I'm the one that's to resolve it and all that. So it's really, it pulls me in so many different directions, but it's also like keeping me busy at the same time. And it's the coolest job I've ever had. I know that was a lot.
No, it's good. It's definitely a full-time job. I think it's safe to say that there is so much that goes into that. And I am definitely one that understands that, because that is not my full-time job. But twice now, 2 years in a row, we've had the Future Stars of RC race. And mm-hmm. so those kind of things that you're talking about are the things that I have been tasked with doing. And I've had a lot of experience with event promotion and events in general, especially when I lived in Ohio, not necessarily remote control specifically. But when I do those sort of things, I definitely have a, if I'm going to do it, it's going to be done to 150%. And everybody who's going to work with me, I demand that from them as well. Yeah. And so Dave is always sometimes like, man, take it easy on the guy. And I'm just like, no, this is Future Stars of RC. And there is going to be this level of professionalism that comes with an event like that. And so I understand how much work it takes, because we plan so long just for that one event, whether it be donations or just all of the things that you have been mentioning is what goes into Future Stars of RC as well. And so I understand it. It's hard to go to school every day and teach and then come home and wrench on my car and go race on the weekends and still find time to do that other stuff that comes with planning the event too. So I can't even imagine doing that for multiple races, because I know how much time that takes to do it for one.
Yeah, I think as of right now, we have a series race every single week, give or take a week, and leading up to Icebreaker. So it's very busy. And the time that I take off for like SSE or Nationals or DNC or whatever it may be, I have to make sure that things are lined up prior to my absence. And I'm also technically still working even though I'm gone. So even though I'm like at the track at SIC, I'm still posting things on social media. I'm still making calls to and from my team and making sure that everything's going smoothly. And then I loved how you said, how you had mentioned Dave asking you to like, hey, take it easy on them. I can 100% agree with you on that. I feel like my arrival to Indy and the structure that I'm bringing is needed, but when I first arrived, I don't think it was liked very much at first, just because it's been a while since, you know, they had that kind of structure. And so at home, when I'm talking to Jared about like certain things that happened at work, he's like, maybe you should just like not be as blunt. And I'm like, well, sometimes I just got to get straight to the point and tell him how it is. I'm not being mean. I'm just being blunt. So I'm like, oh, I don't know. He's like, you should probably sugarcoat it a little bit. I was like, if I do that, nobody listens. But it's interesting.
Yeah, it's not that I'm trying to come off as, or non-intentionally, at least I should say. I don't know how it comes off, but it's not like I'm trying to be bossy. It's just, yeah, I'm trying to make sure that everything is done and everything is done as best as it possibly can be.
Yes.
But the other thing I wanted to ask is, how crazy is it at your house? Because the other thing that I'm picturing, especially living with both Jared and Ty, is I'm picturing how crazy it is at our house. So like one night our dining room table may be a tire gluing station, and for both of us to be wrenching on our cars, it just takes up so much space. For the most part, we work in the trailer now. But, you know, on the occasion, there'll be some tires on the dining room table or some bodies laying on the kitchen sink, because we don't have a sink in the trailer or in the garage. So a lot of cleaning happens there. And so I'm just wondering how crazy it is to be in a house where there's three of you who are like RC racing all the time. So what is that like?
Well, it's not actually that bad because, like, they've kind of made the garage the entire, like, ranch area. So we can't even get a vehicle in there to park. It's, like, completely filled with not only, like, lawn mowing stuff and, you know, outdoor stuff, but it's also filled with tons of, like, racks on racks on racks of, like, tires and parts and cars and all kinds of stuff. And then we also have our wrench tables out there. So I'm super anal about how I like to keep my house most of the time. So our house is always clean. Like the pillows, I'm super anal about like the pillows being on the couch and like the throw blanket being where it's supposed to be and like the kitchen table being nice and cleaned off. And a huge thing for me is the kitchen too. I'm like, everything has to be clean. And we also have a 3-bed, 2-bath house. And so it's Jared and I in one bedroom, Tyler in another bedroom. And then Tyler has kind of like a wrench space office type thing in the second bedroom. So he uses that for any promotion videos that he does for techno. He has a green screen in there. He has a wrench table and all that in there. And it's also kind of a storage room. So surprisingly, we've actually been pretty chill. I think all of us are, I think I'm the most picky out of everybody because I like my house a certain way. And Tyler's very chill. He doesn't really care about what goes on around the house. He doesn't really care about like certain things. He just like goes, he just gets up in the morning, does work, go outside to wrench, and then go to sleep. And then Jared is the same way. He just gets up and then spends the entire day in the garage just wrenching. So it's not as crazy as, you know, you would think. Just because we have those boundaries to where, like, the house is the house and the garage is where the RC stuff is.
That's funny that you say that a car can't fit in the garage, though, because that's definitely how our garage is, too. Way too many toys in the garage.
Yes.
Whether it be RC racing or go-karts or motorcycles. I mean, you name it. But we definitely cannot fit a car in the garage either. But I feel like we've kind of gotten that way with the trailer. Our house is our house. Our RC car stuff is in the trailer. The only thing that really makes it challenging is not having water out in the trailer. If we need water, we've got to come in the house for that.
Yeah.
That's interesting to hear how it is at your house. I think we've caught everybody up to speed on all the major changes that have been going on with you. So I guess we'll go ahead and move on to SIC. So we were both recently at SIC, Racetime Entertainment's first event of the year in Alabama. Mm-hmm. So let's first talk about the racing. It was your first race on your techno cars running e-buggy and nitro buggy for techno. So just talk to us about what it was like to be at that event and be running your techno cars at SIC for the first time.
Yeah, I think I still stand by what I said earlier, where like whenever we go to these big events, that, you know, my program is my program and Jared's program is Jared's program. And he takes, you know, priority over my program. And that's totally fair. Like the position that we are in with RC, that's completely fair. And so when we arrived at SIC, we arrived with a pretty good setup for both of our cars. Like it was pretty decent. And I felt a huge weight lifted off my shoulder having Jared with me. And finally, I was able to pit in the techno room too, because whereas I was running HB, so I couldn't technically pit with them. So I was able to get a spot right across from Jared. I was able to talk with him about setup and tires and everything the entire weekend. And he was very helpful with getting a good setup for my car. And he took a few minutes, you know, to watch my car, watch a practice that I had. And we got my car dialed in really well. The only problem is that I was not, even though I felt really good with my car and my car was really good, I did not feel comfortable at all on the track. I felt like, for my driving and for my, you know, track preferences, I was a little bit spoiled by Indy with it being such high grip and smooth and a very small track to where I could see and hear my car. Whereas when I went to SIC, I forgot how to race on a bigger track almost. And so when I would get on the stands and, you know, drive my car, I lost the ability to drive smooth around the track without having or needing to hear my car when I'm driving. So it was very difficult with timing throttle over jumps for me at that race. And I think once the track just started blowing out and getting rutted, it was even more difficult for me to drive my car. So I just didn't have a very good weekend. I was a C main driver that weekend, and I feel like my car had potential for better results, but the driver needs to learn how to race on those conditions again.
So that was actually one of the things that I was going to comment on, not you being in the C main or your cars, but how nice it is probably to be able to actually pit with Jared at the races and just be able to travel with each other and be in the same pits and not have to, you know, I don't know, separate or be apart in that way.
Yeah, the year prior, the SIC in 2021, I was pitting on the entire opposite side of the arena. So he was pitting in that techno room and I was over where the HB guys were, where like Dylan and Garrett were. And I had to, you know, walk all the way around to go to Jared, be like, hey, do you want to pit for me for this practice? Or I'd call him up and be like, hey, like sitting right across from you, like 20 feet away, but I can't really do anything. do you want to come help me? And so it was really cool to not have to like walk a million miles to be beside him.
Yeah, that's funny. I'm sure it's nice. I watched your cars though, both Nitro Buggy and E-Buggy, and I thought your cars looked great. Like the speed that you had in Nitro Buggy especially was where I really felt like I noticed it. Just really getting on the throttle and being fast through the corners. I thought you looked great, especially having to switch to techno, because like I spoke about earlier in the podcast, sometimes it's hard and it takes a little bit to get comfortable or used to how a completely different car drives. And I thought you looked really good in the cars. So it's only a matter of time. And it was just kind of hard. It was a hard track to stay clean on. And I feel like I learned a valuable lesson after the first qualifier. And then it just, I don't know. So my first qualifier was my best qualifier for sure. I was able to qualify into the top 10 of Nitro Buggy, and I actually resorted into the A heat, which I've never done before. So that in and of itself, just having a qualifier where I was in the top 10 was already an accomplishment that I could say that I didn't do last year at any of the Racetime Entertainment events. The track was very difficult to stay clean on, though. Even before all the big, huge videos that you see with the big, huge ruts coming up and things of that nature, just the way that the jumps were and needing to be in a constant rhythm, like you cannot break that rhythm at all, or kind of hard to get back into the rhythm, especially in a very short 5-minute qualifier. I felt like my goal in the first qualifier was to make sure that I didn't wreck, but not sacrifice my speed to do it. And so my first qualifier was great. And then I saw how high up the leaderboard I was with, you know, not necessarily having the fastest laps, but just making sure that I was consistent. I felt like that actually hurt me in the second qualifier, especially the third qualifier. I kind of just went for it at that point. But the second qualifier, I was like, oh, well, if I could just have a clean run, doesn't necessarily need to be fast, but if I could just have a clean run and squeak into the top 10 one more time, you know, I'm going to be okay. But I feel like I backed it up a little bit too much and sacrificed my speed to be able to, you know, not have the wreck, because you know, it felt like everybody was wrecking. And honestly, in the second qualifier, I did have a wreck. So even though it was only one and a marshal got me pretty quick, it's just like, if the track is getting to the point where you're potentially gonna wreck, you really can't sacrifice your speed you've just kind of got to go for it and hope that you're going fast enough that a wreck isn't necessarily going to hurt you. And so I feel like I did back it off a little bit too much in the second qualifier. And so the third qualifier, I really went for it and I felt pretty good and felt like I had decent speed, not the fastest, but it just wasn't enough to get into the A main. I was in traffic or making my own mistakes. And so it just wasn't a perfect qualifier to begin with, but it wasn't a top 10 qualifier again. And so that put me into the B. I was still pretty confident going into the B. I felt like I had a good car and I felt like resorting into the A heat that I clearly had potential to be into the A heat. But after the second corner, first lap, I haven't even made a lap yet, we just kind of got all bunched up. So I started sixth in the main, and I don't know who it was, either first, second, third, fourth, or fifth, got caught in some of the ruts in the first corner. And so although I was able to avoid them, it really bunched up the pack going into the second corner because, you know, everybody was trying to do that. Everybody was trying to avoid them, and it's the first or second corner of the race. And so I felt like I was downsiding the next jump after the second corner pretty nicely. And I felt like I wasn't overshooting it, but the car behind me definitely did overshoot it and landed on me and broke my shock. So I rode around for a couple more laps just because I was like, you know, I know what this means. I know this means that I'm probably not bumping. I'm sitting in 15th right now after the first lap. And it was extremely difficult. Sometimes it would turn and my shock wouldn't be stuck up in the air and it would be fine. And sometimes I would jump and my shock would be stuck in the air, or it would be stuck when I was turning and it would be so hard to drive. But mm-hmm. I stayed out there for a little bit just because, you know, you travel all that way. Mm-hmm. So only have a half a corner. I was like, I'm just gonna stick it out, Dave, until they start to lap me, because I knew it was gonna happen. I mean, the car was hard to drive with a shock like that. And so mm-hmm. once I finally started to get lapped, I pulled it off. It's just hard to drive with a broken shock.
Yeah.
But Truggy was like the total opposite. Truggy never felt good at all this weekend. And I was in the C main of Truggy. So speaking of C main, and I did not get out of the C main. It's the first time that I've ever run the new HB Truggy. And so I finally switched and got the new Truggy for the 2022 season. And it's safe to say that the setup isn't where it needs to be. It was just extremely difficult to drive. Like, it almost felt like the car was broken. And it felt like all of the changes that I was making, because I feel like I wrenched on it every single qualifier, I was trying to do something to make it drive better. It felt like I was going backwards, not forwards. And in the warm-up lap, I actually thought my Truggy was broke. And so I pulled it into Dave and I was like, I don't think I put the drive shaft back in. I think when I rebuilt the diffs that I didn't put it back in. I think the car's broken. And I pulled it in and Dave was like, no, the car's not broken. And I was like, okay, well, this is going to be hard to drive in the main then. Got some testing to do there. One thing that I'm thinking might help how I'm feeling with that car is the 12 and a half degree caster blocks that are on it. A lot of people run the 20s. So that's a pretty big difference. It's one of the first things that I'm going to try.
It's 12 and a half?
Yeah, that's what it comes with.
18 and a half?
No.
What in the world?
Yeah, it's safe to say that it feels pretty loose. And just like we were talking about before, that's like loose to the point where I cannot drive it. Like, that's why I thought the drive shaft was out of it and that I didn't put it back in the diff, because that's what it felt like. It felt like the car was just, you know, like turning on end. And so It's one of the first things that I'm going to play around with. I'm not for sure what was making it feel like that, but after talking to some other HB drivers and even seeing some HB drivers post about it, like Miss Bella's dad posted about her e-truggy, and I know e-truggy is not the same as nitro truggy, but she was talking about how she had the 20s on there and she absolutely loved it. So I was like, well, you know, maybe that's definitely worth a try, because I was already kind of thinking about that.
Yeah, I was actually speaking with Garrett yesterday. He's one of our local indie racers, and he said that he even went to, on his nitro buggy, he went to 20-degree caster blocks from 17.5 and from the zero, what are they called? They're not spindles, are they? No, it's not. For that car, it's not called spindles, I don't think. But he went from zeros to twos or something like that. And he said that going up like that helped smooth out the steering for him and his buggy, at least. So I'm only assuming that since it worked for the buggy, that it would work for the truggy.
Yeah, I've never tested it in buggy, but it definitely piqued my interest after seeing other people talk about it, just wondering how it would feel on a buggy. I've only ever run the 17.5s on a buggy. But yeah, Dave ran it at Fall Brawl and he was totally fine. He didn't feel the way that I felt, but it was also at Badlands and it was also extremely high grip. Like, we're talking like 75 degree weather. We're running S2s, which is like the hardest tire that Proline makes. Mm-hmm. And so it somewhat makes sense to me that he wouldn't notice it on a track like that, being that it's high grip, and I would notice it more on a track that really doesn't have grip. So I'm not for sure if that's it, but it's definitely something that I'm going to test. Our local track here that's closest to us is called Overcash, and it has pretty similar conditions. And so it's one of the things that I'm going to try and see if I can find a setup that's in general for that condition, just so I kind of have an idea of what works pretty good when it's high grip, what works pretty good when it doesn't. But yeah, hopefully we get a better setup going on that.
Fingers crossed. I'm sure you guys will find it.
Let's talk about the track. So I feel like where the bumps were, if anybody's seen a lot of the videos from SIC, I feel like if a track is going to blow out, I don't know if this even makes sense what I'm saying, but it blew out in the places where you would want it to blow out. So what I mean by that is you don't want it to blow out on the face of a jump, and then it's just impossible to figure out what the car is going to do in the air when you're trying to land a jump. I felt like the places where the track blew out, or there were a lot of holes, whatever you want to call them, character, is kind of going into the corners. And so it just made it interesting to me. Like, I actually thought it was pretty fun to just kind of find some different lines. Like, for example, going into the first corner, we just posted a video on the TikTok and on the Race Like a Girl Facebook page of the pro truggy A main guys going through that first corner.
Yeah, they were going up all hardly.
I know. I didn't try that, which I thought was so interesting watching them and just thinking about if I should have moved my line out. I felt like if you hugged it really close to the pipe, there was a little bit of a line in there that you could still do. But in truggy, especially because the car's wider than the buggy, even if you took that inside line, your wheels were still touching the holes. So you still kind of had to be careful. So it's like interesting to think about, well, is that faster because I'm in the line, even though I may be going a little bit slower? Or very clearly, if you watch the pros go through there in the truggy A main and they're ringing it around the outside, touching the wall, basically, it's like, well, they're not in the line, but they're also carrying a lot more speed than maybe I was taking the inside line. So I think it's fun and interesting when there's different lines and different things that you can take into consideration with that. But just talk to us about how you felt about the track and what the track was like for you.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like for me, my ideal conditions, I think I mentioned it earlier, are smooth, high grip tracks. The size doesn't really matter, but SIC was huge, so it was difficult for me to adjust from Indy. So this, it was really loose and they didn't water at all. And I feel like later on in the weekend, like at the end of quals and like mains, it started to get, the grip came up, but there was also dust on top. So you were really playing with tires to still have like a small enough tread to like grip the line, but also have enough tread to clear the dust and break the dust. And for the track, later on when it came around like end of quals and mains and it was that condition, we were paying really attention, like as we were lining up on the driver's stand, we were paying a lot of attention to the previous race before us to see what their lines were. And so for the entire right side, it's like that short straightaway, kind of bull turn straightaway, and then it came on to like the actual straightaway. It got super rutted over on the right side where you would normally just round it out and go wide, but you couldn't really do that anymore. You had to go slow through the first top right corner, cut it in super tight where it was smooth, and then right when you get onto the straightaway, you would have to go super tight like on the pipe, or you would rail it on the outside like in the dust and try not to get loose and spin out. So my lines before in like e-buggy during the quals was to go super tight on the pipe and just try to go slower. And then I would have that grip there that I needed to take off on the straightaway. And some other people were going like super wide around the ruts, just like on throttle railing the whole thing and almost hitting like the start of pit lane, which Jared was also doing too. And it was just blowing my mind how you're like inches off pit lane and like, how is that not scary? And then by the time you get to the end of the straightaway, I was watching some of the previous drivers in the last race, and some of them were going super tight like you were, but still hitting like their outside tire on the ruts and going, you know, slower and taking their time through that. And then other drivers were going extremely wide and just railing the whole thing like you were. And me, I decided to take a line that was wide so it didn't hit any of those ruts, but I would create a 90 to where I didn't go up the wall like the truggies were. I just created a 90 and then shot off like past the ruts. So that was helping me a lot. And then over the tabletop in the back, there were some ruts that were, you know, surfacing at the 180 before the triple. So we go over the triple. And that was a difficult thing for me too, was timing this tabletop and the triple, and especially the front rhythm section, like the 9-pack. That was a huge thing that caught me, because that first little hump before the first double in the 9-pack, you'd have to, some people were like hitting it harder to where they would land almost on the face of the double and then going out. And then what I was trying to do was roll the hump to set myself up for that double. But because it was so loose and dusty at the bottom of the hump, that by the time I got on throttle, my car was, you know, the rear end of my car was just wishy-washy all the way up the face of the double, and it would kind of mess me up throughout, you know, right off the bat. So I had to learn really fast, and I didn't learn until like the end of my mains on main day on how to get through that 9-pack, because I don't know, it was just so tricky for me and really difficult. But when we came around the right side and hit the whoops, that whoop section was one of the easiest parts of the track for me, oddly enough. I was just taking my time. I doubled in and then singled the rest of it. And throughout qualifying, in practice, I was just a little flustered and frustrated with myself, because I just couldn't get the timing of my motor, the timing of, you know, the jumps down. I couldn't get the 9-pack down. I was just really, really flustered with myself on driving on the track. Qual 1 came around for my e-buggy and my nitro buggy, and I was doing the same thing that you were doing in Q1, where I was just taking it easy. I was just trying not to wreck. I was just trying to get through the, you know, through the 9-pack clean. And I still made mistakes, but I was trying my best to stay in my line. And as soon as I like went around turns or coming onto the straightaway or something that didn't have jumps, I was really good at keeping my line tight. But as soon as I hit those jumps, like any of the jumps on the track, I just couldn't hold my car. And so Q2 came around for my e-buggy, and I was just upset. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to drive this car as hard as I can. I don't care about anything else. I'm just going to go out there and have fun, and I'm going to drive my butt off. I'm just going to drive extremely hard and not care. So what I did is I drove extremely hard. I was triple quadding the whoops. I was like railing the outside of the straightaway the entire time. And I was just like, at this point, I was just driving mad. But I came back and I drove better. I got a faster lap and I was like, I crashed the same amount of times. But because like on this track, I think you were saying earlier, is you can't sacrifice your speed. So in qual three, I decided to, you know, get my head together. My dad, who never really watches like my racing, he texted me and I was like, hey, by the way, if you wanted to watch, I'm up in like two races. He goes, cool. So my mindset going up into this final qual was like, oh my gosh, my dad's watching. I have to put on a good show. And so that run, I was fast and I was surprisingly consistent over the jumps where I wasn't earlier on in the day and was able to hold my own. So I did pretty well, but even with that, I was still somewhat struggling, not with the car, but with the track in general. It was just really tricky for me. So I didn't really land that well in the mains. I think I landed starting 11th in E-buggy, and I started 4th in the C-main for nitro buggy. I had a really bad start in nitro buggy, and I was just kind of not driving with my head on straight that run. I was just not connected to the car. Jared like almost thought that I was distracted by something when I was driving, because he came up to me after the main. He was like, you didn't look like you were driving your car. You looked like you were just driving your car, but like focusing on something else. I was like, I know, I couldn't drive my car. And for e-buggy, we decided to take a different approach to things. I think we were all talking about this at the end of the weekend and going into main day, where we think that the air quality for nitro motors was extremely good, because Jared was getting really good mileage, which is something that doesn't happen very often. I was getting very good mileage. I couldn't control my car. Like, our cars just had so much power that I had to turn down my throttle EPA a lot to be able to control my car. And then we also did the same thing with my e-buggy, but my e-buggy was just touchy in general. Like the punchiness was very aggressive. Like as soon as you hit the throttle, it was extremely punchy. And so he decided to mess with my torque and my frequency. And that e-buggy main was the best main that I had had, or the best run that I had had at all throughout the entire weekend. And so I went from 11th to 4th, and I was sitting in, I moved all the way up to the second spot and in the lead for a couple of laps for like the first three bump spots for the majority of the race. And then I heard that Kayla Espinel was coming up behind me. I was in 4th and she was in 5th at this time. And I was like, no, I don't. I want to beat her so bad. And so she was coming up behind me and I was really trying to hold my own. And I just made one mistake that bumped me out of the third spot, out of that final bump spot. And she passed me for that fourth spot as well. So I was sitting in 5th at this time and we had like a minute left to go or something. And I come around and she made a mistake on the very last lap, like right before the start finish line, went over the pipe and I swung by her for the fourth spot. But they was still just like barely missing the final bump spot. I was so upset. I was like, man, my car felt really good. I was, you know, drive the car correctly this time, and you know, it didn't have too much power for me, and I was able to be confident in my driving in my head, and then I just barely missed the bump spot to the B. But yeah, my nitro main didn't go that well. My e-buggy went pretty good. I'm happy, but I had a lot of fun during that weekend. And we have a track here at home. It's called A1, Action Park at Grand Prairie in like the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And that's very similar conditions to SIC in the fact that it's bumpy, it's super high grip, but also dusty and busy. And so I think as much as I wasn't a huge fan of the track, because I don't do well on it, the track is really cool. I just don't run well on it. I think I need to start visiting it more to prepare myself for these race time races.
I definitely think I'm a better chaser than a leader. So that situation that you were talking about, I would definitely be nervous when someone's coming up on me, because it's just easier for me to chase than to lead. But something that I also thought was interesting that you talked about getting better gas mileage at SIC, and we were actually discussing for Dave's A-Main, Dave made the A-Main an open, that, you know, his race was 30 minutes, and I was like, yeah, there's no way you can go 10. We were just at Beast of the East last weekend, and, you know, we measured the fuel mileage, and it was only good for, like, 9. So... Mm-hmm. He measures it every race anyways, just to see where we're at. And he measured it and he was like, man, I think I can go 11. And I was just like, what? That is crazy that we're seeing like 2 minute difference in our fuel mileage. So we almost went 10 in his main. But the reason why we ultimately decided not to is he measured his fuel mileage in his third qualifier. And his third qualifier is when he ran a different tire. It was actually a clay that he was on. And just how aggressive the clay was, he felt like he really had to be easy on the throttle and wasn't full punched. Mm. And so he felt like that was contributing to him having better fuel mileage as well. So we ultimately decided not to go 10 because he felt like if he was driving harder in the main than he was in that third qualifier, then that could potentially put us in a tough spot, and it's just really not worth it when you're talking about like a 6 second pit stop in a 30 minute race. If you can do it, great, then gain the time. But if you're even thinking about being close to it, I feel like with a race that long, we might as well just come in for a splash type deal. So that's ultimately what we decided to do. I let him go pretty long and then just kind of gave him a splash at the end. But we were honestly thinking about it because I felt like the air quality was just good in Alabama. And so everything was a little bit leaner than it is where we typically run. And, you know, we were definitely seeing some better gas mileage too.
He was mentioning how, like, with the air quality being good, he could run his motors leaner too. And it wouldn't, because normally, like, if he leans out his motors, it'll come in pinging. Like, the idle will be super high, and it'll come in pinging. But this time, it came in and dropped straight to the idle. It didn't have an issue at all.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then the last thing that I was going to touch on is you were talking about the corner where you come onto the front straightaway and how there were some kind of different holes forming there that you had to change your line from being the inside line to the outside line, or just, you know, ringing it around the outside sometimes to avoid all of that. If I had to pick my least favorite spot on the track, it is 100% that spot, because that is the spot where I feel like I could visibly see the time sucking out of me in that section. Like, if I'm a half second to a second off Dave, probably 3/4 of that time is in that section. I swear to you, it is. Mm-hmm. What was so hard about that section is it, with it being so far on the right-hand side, I felt like it was difficult for me to see exactly where the holes were. And just because there were so many of them, it's hard to just hit them one time and then remember exactly where it is when you go through it the next time, because that's what a lot of people say is, well, just hit the pipe one time so you could find out where it is and then adjust your line the second time. I felt like there were so many different holes forming there, and there's just so much going on in that section that it just felt like I could do no right there. And then I was so, so scared of a wreck for whatever reason. Sometimes I just can't get that out of my head, that I just overslowed that section and really felt like that section specifically, I had a lot of opportunity to gain some time there if I would have just powered through it. For the most part, if you were pointed straight, even if you were going through the hole, like, it was going to be okay. And that's what even Dave would keep telling me too, is just make sure you're straight and go. But man, when that whole thing is like a sweeping, not necessarily a sweeper, it doesn't even have a bank, I don't know, sure, I'll call it a sweeper. When that whole thing is like a giant turn, it's so hard to cut the track up like that, to be these short, straight squirts of throttle that you're giving it until you get to the next hole and need to turn and slow down again. So if I had to pick a section that I hated the most, it is 100% that section.
My section was the 9-pack. I hated the 9-pack. It was cool, but I just couldn't get through it without crashing at least once.
When I heard you talking, you were like, oh yeah, the whoops was no big deal. The whoops was a huge deal for me. So that's funny how we differ in there too. I focus so much on that. I don't know if I'm just scarred from nationals. Maybe that's it. I'm scarred from nationals because nationals with the 6-pack or 10-pack, I don't even know how there's so many packs in all these tracks that we go to that I don't even know how many it was at that point, because it's like the cool thing to do is have a pack of something at every track that we go to. At the Fuel Nationals, I was taking like a different line every time I went through there. Sometimes I would double, 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 double. Sometimes I would triple, double, triple. Sometimes I would triple, triple, double. Like, and it was just such a mind game to get through there. And so I was committed that when I was practicing and saw that section at SIC, that I was going to figure out what was going to be fast. And I was going to commit to that and not let up from that. Well, after like the second or third session, that went out the window because I was like, there's no way I'm triple quadding this thing like some of the fast guys are. So I was really just trying to double, 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 double. And I swear to you, it took me forever even to figure that out. Finally, what worked is not trying to treat it as a jump. I was trying so hard to make sure that I doubled it or tripled it or whatever you want to say about it, that it was actually hurting me because I was like focusing too much or trying to pay too much attention to where the throttle and brake was. And we're talking about like in between those jumps, there's like a very little run to even think about those things going to the next one. It was definitely better to hit it on the inside. There was more of a run when you were on the inside. But when I finally stopped thinking about them as jumps and I just like hit the throttle and went through it, it was perfect. I could double, 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 and it was fine. And that's what I stuck to the rest of the weekend. But man, did it take me a long time to get to that point.
Yeah, I think there was a couple times I find myself doing the same thing where I just look at it as doubles and not really a whoop section or something that's small. Like Jared had to let me know a couple of times, just be easy on the throttle when you first go in, because sometimes I was too hard on throttle where my car would just go straight up in the air and it wouldn't like, it would just be, it would land on the very top of the, like the third jump. So I feel like for me, he would just tell me, just back off on the throttle a little bit. As soon as you go in, just kind of roll over it. You'll clear the double and just, you know, steadily go through and you'll be fine. And I had to learn the same thing. At first, I was just trying to make it through without crashing at all. And then, especially when I was around traffic, I knew that if there was traffic around me, like 3 or 4 cars around me, somebody's going to wreck. So my whole goal was to be slower going into the whoops than anyone else around me, because somebody else is going to wreck. And so I was just worried about trying to get around them if they wrecked in the middle of the whoops. So I would be extremely slow through the whoops and just roll around them. And I ultimately, even though I was slower, I would ultimately come out ahead of them because they wrecked and were upside down.
I'm going to go into 2 more things here aside from the track. And I'm going to be critical here for a second. The first thing I'm going to be critical about is the advertisement was that the middle of winter, come race in a heated facility. Mm. There is no if, ands, or buts about it. In the middle of winter at that facility, there is no warm place in that building besides the bathrooms. I just want to throw that out there that there's a little bit of false advertising because it was absolutely freezing in that building. Mm. Not that it wasn't last year, but don't try to sell it to me that an indoor race is going to be warm, because that was anything but warm.
Yeah, there was like no heat on. And if there was, it was barely on. They had, and I respect that they opened the doors because of the nitro, but opening the doors just let in all the cold air. And then also, none of the rooms that anybody was in, there was no heat in anything. And I get that like the rooms, quote unquote, were like just, you know, spaces between 2 double doors, but still we were fortunate enough to have a couple propane heaters in our room, in the techno room, and people would like sometimes come out of their pit area and stand in front of our propane heater so that they can get warm for their next run. And it was very, very cold. I had worn a long sleeve turtleneck and Under Armour, like kind of like long johns type thing, underneath my pants the entire weekend.
I probably had 4 layers of clothes on too, and I was in a heated trailer. But every time I was in that building, it felt like I was in some 0 degree weather, that's for sure. And I respect them opening the door for nitros too, but I seriously think that even if they didn't open those doors, that it wouldn't have been any warmer.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I'm going to be kind of critical about, which I know is not like me, but I actually have a suggestion for this one. I don't really have a suggestion for it being cold other than just don't market it that way, because let's call it what it is. It's cold. It's not warm. Mm-hmm. Is practice. So the practice lines for SIC, and I feel like we have to talk about this race in isolation for a second, because if I think of some of the other race time entertainment events that I go to, like Psycho Nitro is 24-hour practice, and Wicked Weekend has 2 different days that you could practice. You could practice Thursday or you could practice Friday. I feel like we don't even necessarily have to say this is about race time entertainment specifically, but since we were just at SIC, I'm going to use this race as an example. It is very hard when the line is that long to do what I want to do in practice. And what I mean by that is if I go out there and make a run, I don't feel like I have time to go back to my trailer and make a change because of the way that the line is and how long the line is. I have like this insane urge to get back in line and wait again, knowing that it's going to take me that long to just get another run in. So at that point, it becomes about track time and not about the changes that I'm making on the car to make the car better. And I feel like you need to have a balance of both. Like, track time is definitely valuable, but I feel like the issue can be fixed if there is practice by alphabet, just like there is at Wicked Weekend. So at Wicked Weekend, after the Friday, people practice. Their Friday practice ends at like 12:30. I'm always the Friday people, so that's why I know this schedule. And then at 12:30, before we go into the next qualifier or the first qualifier, everybody gets a practice session that's by alphabet. So what I mean by alphabet is that even if you're running 5 classes, you only get 1 practice. You can pick whatever class you want to go out there and practice with. I mean, it's an 8-skill race, so yes, some buggies might be running with some chuggies, but it's like that in open practice too. It's not like you only practice with buggies or only practice with chuggies. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if there was a system, whether it be 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 4 minutes, 7 minutes, if you just continually ran through the alphabet and just picked whatever class you wanted to run, you would have a set time that you knew was your time to go out there and practice, and you could show up 30 seconds before it was your time and be okay, which would allow you to go work on your car the other 45 minutes or an hour, even sometimes, that you just waited in the line and couldn't work on your car. And the other way that I've seen this done successful at a track was at LCRC at Nationals. So the issue becomes, well, what if it's somebody's race and only 6 people go out there? Then you've just wasted that time because there's 10 other spots. Mm-hmm. Well, the way that LCRC did it is they had a wait line. So if you wanted to wait in line and it wasn't your alphabet time, you could go wait in the wait line. And if there were 10 spots up there, then, you know, 10 people would go from the wait line. I feel like a system like that could work. Does it take some organization / another person to facilitate that? Maybe. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about a 600-person event. I feel like it would be so beneficial to have something like that.
Yeah, I think it's hard to touch on that too, because I completely see what you mean. And the whole LCRC thing, I think that was genius. They had that fill-in line was awesome, because you're right. If there's some people that didn't make that practice run, then why would it be open? You know, so that wait line that they had was super, super helpful, especially for those guys that were struggling a little bit more than others. They could use that to their advantage and go to the wait line. With SIC, yeah, I don't know. I never went to Wicked, so I'm not familiar with the... I think I showed up for main day on Wicked, or the end of qualifying day, whenever it happened this past year, because I wasn't able to get the time away, but then I made a last-minute decision to go and support Jared. But I never really... I never went to Wicked, so I didn't know that whole alphabet thing existed. I didn't know what that was. And so I might have to, you know, talk with you a little bit more about that, because I'm not really sure what you mean by that. But with SIC, I almost feel like, how many people would you say were at PNB last year? Do you think it was like 800 or entries? I mean, 800 entries?
Yeah, I think it was over. I mean, I think it was under 900, but over 800. It wasn't like, it was definitely big, but I think their biggest was over 900. So it wasn't technically their biggest.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I waited in line as much at that race as I did at SIC, though.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, because I went to PNB this past year for the first time, or like last year or something, and I feel like practice went faster and smoother at PNB with 200 more entries than it did at SAC this year. The practice line got so bad this year that from the driver's stand all the way to the opposite side of the arena, that's where like the line was going to. And so you had this hour-long line, and they started cutting down the practice time. So you'd be waiting in line for practice for, you know, a 5-minute session. And then it went to a 4-minute session. And then eventually they got down to 3 minutes, where you were only practicing for 3 minutes. And a lap was, what, 30-something seconds long, like 34 seconds long or something like that. So you were up on the stands for a total maybe four laps if you're lucky. And then you're waiting in line for an entire hour to get up and get that 3 minutes of track time and four laps, which was just mind-blowing to me, because last year at SIC, the practice line wasn't this bad. And for them to, I just think there's a whole lot of like conflict in between too, because once you get to a certain amount of entries, you either have to open up the track for 24 hours like PNB, or you have to make it like an extra day for the event and like offer more practice, because you're squeezing all these people in for maybe like a 16-hour day of practice, and you're getting even more entries. You're getting at least 100 more entries every year, but you're keeping the same schedule. So I think it's really difficult too, because even if they extended it for an extra day of practice, people would get upset about that being a longer event, because they have to show up earlier, they have to, you know, take that extra time off of work and, you know, spend extra money at another hotel night. And I think it's just, you kind of lose in every situation, unless, you know, with the wait line that you were talking about and the controlled practice and like the alphabet practice. I think that there's got to be a better system that they can do for SIC, or, you know, any of these events that the entries are growing but the schedule is not. So it's kind of like a difficult thing to address.
Yeah, so the whole alphabet thing that they do at Wicked Weekend is, I think they do it by first name, but like all the A's or however far they can get through, maybe A's and B's are heat one, and then B's and C's are heat two, and C's and D's are heat three, so on and so forth. And so you know what heat you are. So if my first name is Katie with a C. So I'm in heat three at Wicked Weekend because I'm at the beginning of the alphabet. Now, if they ran through the alphabet more than once, then I'd be heat three every single time. So yes, it's a little bit more organized in that sense. And I guess now that I'm talking out loud about it, I guess the challenge is that you have people still signing up. Like, think about myself. I signed up that morning of. So how the heck can you put people in heat if you're signing up that morning of? Like, that would force you to have signups a little bit earlier to be that organized. But I really think it would help, because when heat three's up, okay, I go out and practice. I have to pick for SIC, I ran truggy and buggy. I would have to pick, okay, this run I'm going to run buggy, this run I'm going to run truggy. So you don't get more track time just because you're running more classes. You have to pick which class you're going to practice when it's your time to go out.
Yeah, I think that alphabet thing is a good idea. I think it really is. And I think I agree with you about the, you know, the late signups thing. And I have two things to touch on when it comes to that. As a promoter, and you probably know this too, I'm assuming, but as a promoter, like for Dave, I think more entries is the better, because first of all, that's more, you know, bang for your buck. That's more money in your pocket for that event. But also it's a thing where, what if you take those late entries and what if you use that as an incentive? Say we're doing alphabet practice like we're doing for Wicked. And if you decide to sign up the morning of, well, first of all, they need to, you know, promote not signing up the morning of. They have to, you know, do something to incentivize using RC signup and, you know, a prior signup date. But for those that happen to sign up the morning of or couldn't help it, they could be at the bottom of the practice thing. So they'd have like one heat that was just random, but it was your fault because you decided to sign up late. I don't know if it would work that way. And I feel like in the end, it just wouldn't be alphabetical either. I think people, depending on your incentive, I think people just wouldn't pay attention to that. And two, I think for me, for Icebreaker, what I'm doing is I'm doing like a 250 cap. And I know for Dave, he wants like the most entries that he can get. But for me, our facility only holds about 250 to 300 entries comfortably. So we're doing a 250 cap and then we're doing heat fillers after. So that offers the most amount of entries. That's like the max amount of entries by the end of it that we can, you know, house in our facility. And we have like a sign up date. Like we have signups open from this date to this date. And once it's closed, you can't get in anymore. And I know that kind of sucks for Dave because he wants more money and he wants, you know, he wants all the entries that he can get. He wants people to be involved with the race and he wants as many racers as he can get to be involved in these cool race time entertainment events. But I think there has to be somewhere that you just draw the line and say, okay, well, we can do this and not really any much more because of practice, because you're waiting in line and there's the conflict of signing up the day of, which I think if you're able to, just use RC signup. And I know there's a lot of people out there that don't like using RC signup, that don't agree with like some technology that is, you know, out now. They don't like putting their credit card information in. They don't like using PayPal, or they don't have PayPal. So I know that's some things that either the racers are going to have to come to terms with, like this is the 21st century. So there's a lot of things that are online now, or you just accept that you can possibly accept like he's doing now. But then also you have to accommodate for reasonable practice somewhere. So I think it's just a lot of variables and factors that you have to kind of work around in order to get a smooth, clean, like practice schedule and like signups and all that. But I know that we talked a little bit amongst our team at Indy for that, like at least Lone Star and Icebreaker, we take signups through the shop. We take signups through RC signup. People can come into our shop and sign up, but for the race time events, obviously you can't do that because there's no like physical shop that you can go into. But then we have that cap. So I don't really know. I know that by the end of signups and by the time the race weekend comes around, we don't have a problem with, you know, people signing up late because we already have our heat sheets organized and set out. But I don't know how any of that would work with, you know, the race time events.
All in all, it was a great event. I don't want to make it seem like I'm knocking the event. It's just that is one area that I think that we could improve on a little bit, maybe potentially. But like I said, all in all, I thought it was a great event. I mean, for race time entertainment specifically, You see us at as many of those as we can go to. So you'll see us at PNB. You'll see us at Wicked Weekend. We're even going to try to throw, I forget what one is in June, either AMS or Southern Nets. I don't know. One of those two is actually during my summer break this year instead of in the fall, which is awesome. So we can attend one of those. So see us there. I don't want to make it seem like we don't like the events, but trying to think about a way that we can make it a little better.
Yeah, it was a nice brainstorming activity, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, before we kind of wrap up, I do want to ask about Jared's racing, because it is kind of a unique or interesting situation that you and your boyfriend both race, and he does it as a pro level. So kind of talk to us about Jared's weekend, what it was like, what his results were. I know you are his mechanic / pit guy. So just talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, every time he goes to one of these race time event or any national event or any event in general, he, you know, his goal is to win or, you know, to be in contention for those top podium spots, especially to win. Like, he really wants to win. But whenever we were going into SIC, we had a pretty good setup, you know, with his car and my car, and we had a pretty good plan where, like, his parents were coming out that weekend as well, so he was able to, you know, help pit for us, and, you know, use the stopwatch to time things and making sure that our pit stops were good for him. And so we ultimately decided that I would catch and fuel, and his dad would be behind me with the stopwatch, starting and stopping the stopwatch to make sure that the pit stop time that we had set prior to the race start was as accurate as it could be. Because you could always look at, you know, the time clock that's going or the race clock and say, okay, we're pitting at 7:30, 15, 22 and a half for a 30-minute race, right? Well, you're losing at least, like, I don't know, like an extra 6 seconds or whatever it may be, or 10 seconds or whatever it may be, whenever you come into fuel, like the entire process. So it was extremely valuable to have the times as accurate as they could be, you know, starting and stopping the watch whenever he came in and came out. So that was a good thing. And for him, he had a really good weekend. I think his cars, you know, he was, his fast laps and his times for qualifying were right there with everybody else, which was a huge plus. And as you would want with any pro top racer, you want to be, you know, relevant and consistent with everybody else. And then whenever the mains came by, he felt really good in his races. However, later on in the evening on Sunday, I think we were coming down with something, he just didn't feel well. He felt a little bit tired and sick at the end of the weekend. So in his mind, he felt like he wasn't at the best that he could have been, but he did really well. I mean, he got, you know, all top 10 finishes besides E-Buggy. E-Buggy was just not that great for him, but he got top 10 finishes and, you know, Nitro Truck and Nitro Buggy. So he did really well this weekend. I'm proud of him.
So let's talk about pitting, because this episode is coming out after I shared your pit stop on TikTok and the Race Like a Girl page. So it's no secret that your pit stops are freaking fast. Let's first talk about the statistics. So TikTok alone, it's got 3 million views right now as we're recording this. It's got close to 70,000 likes, almost 500 comments, 2,000 shares. On Facebook, it's got 220 shares and 250 likes just on my page alone. That's not including all the 220 people that shared it. So talk to us first about how you got to the point that you did to be as fast as you are. Like, is it something that you practice, or is it something that just comes pretty natural to you?
I think I'm a very particular person. I think whenever I do something, I want to do it to the best of my ability. With that being said, however, I have not practiced a pit stop once in my life at all. So it's pretty interesting. I think we just attend races so often that whether it be like club racing or bigger events, that alone is practice in itself. Because I know when I started racing in 2016, like I started racing consistently in 2016. I've been involved in racing since like 08, 09, but consistently I started racing in 2016, and I would only go to like a big race maybe once every 6 months or once every 3 or 4 months, just because I wasn't able to take off that time from work. And I just couldn't afford it at the time. And so during that time, I was kind of just being fast, doing, you know, my normal pit stops. But I think I go back and watch the videos of my pit stops too and think, what can I do better? Because even though I don't practice my pit stops, I still watch film, like, as you know, football players do, as basketball players do or whatnot. I do that with my own racing. I'll ask Jared to record me racing, or those pit stop videos are a huge plus too whenever somebody gets them, because I can go back that and watch, okay, well, I was slow here. And I also watch the fast guys in pit lane whenever I'm not pitting. So if there was more often than not before this weekend at SIC, Jared's dad would be pitting and I would just be watching from the sidelines, which was awesome, by the way. I love watching these pro mains. And while I'm sitting up there below the driver's stand just watching everybody, I would watch the guys that are coming into pit. The Tessmans. Gord is one of the fastest guys on the gun that I know. Who else? I can't even really think of. Richard Saxon is nice and smooth. I was watching, you know, all these pro guys and their pit guys that have been their pit guys for a long time, and seeing what their techniques are. And I've come to notice that, especially with the truggy, I don't know why, but I'm smoother at pit stops with the truggy than I am the buggy. I don't know if it's because it's bigger, that I can actually like not think as hard to catch it, if, you know, whatever it is, I can pit the truggy better than I pit the buggy. It's odd. And I think with the new body style, with it having the shock tower exposed, in that video that you posted on the Race Like a Girl TikTok page, I was able to grab the truggy by the tower and drag it off into pit lane. So that meant I didn't have to use both hands, and I just used one hand, which means I could still have the gun in the tank fueling with my hand on the tower getting ready to pull it out of pit lane and then release the gun, and it's like on pit lane already. So I think that was a huge thing, where having that improvement on the body styles of the truggies, not only for the racers on the track, because it's more aerodynamically, like, I don't know how you would say that. It's aerodynamically better for the car over the jumps, but it also helps the pit guy in pit lane, because I can actually have access to the tower now and just drag it off. And because I am a petite, small person, the truggy is obviously heavier than a buggy, and the buggy is already heavy for me to get off pit lane. And I don't have muscles, I don't work out, but it was nice to be able to have that technique of dragging the car off of the step up or whatever, off of the wall onto pit lane. So being able to drag it off and him be easy on the throttle too, like, helped a lot. I don't know, it was just like one fluid motion that, like, as soon as I would also put myself over the wall as far out into pit lane as I could, so that I can grab the car, put it on pit lane, open the tab, have my hand on the tower already getting ready to drag, fuel gun goes in the gun, I wait for the exact second for the fuel to go down the gun and then stop, and then I drag it out like immediately. But I don't know, it's just like, we've talked about it after the races, we've talked like, oh, you could drag it at the same time, try to use one hand instead of using two hands and whatnot. I also actually came up with the thought of, like, what if I just had a glove on my left hand, so that when I'm grabbing the tower, grabbing the car, it doesn't hurt my hand, which it does a lot of the times. The tower kind of hurts my hand, so I would sometimes use a glove. But I don't know, I feel like the glove gets in the way of pulling the tab too, so I kind of just gave up on that idea.
It's why I don't wear a glove, because Dave has actually hurt my hand that way before. Like, I've physically got a bruise on my hand. He's not hurting me, don't get me wrong, but just I'm trying to catch it when he's going so fast. Like, it's me consciously trying to do that. Mm-hmm. But is why I don't wear a glove, because I feel disconnected with what my left hand needs to do when I'm wearing a glove. It's the same reason I won't wear gloves when I'm on the driver's stand. I cannot wear gloves that are covering my fingers on either my throttle hand or my steering hand, because I don't know what it is. I mean, it's the same motion, the same everything. It just makes me feel very disconnected from my controller. So I feel like it's a similar feel in that sense. But I think it's interesting that you touched on the Bruggy Body, because we don't have Bruggy Bodies yet. But I have pitted people who have Bruggy Bodies, and I do feel like there is an advantage to the top of the gas tank being kind of more exposed. It's difficult when it's completely covered. Just either one, like how to cut your body, you almost like need to cut your body that way so that you can easily fuel it when it's as big of a car as the Truggy. But two, it's more difficult to grab because the body is covering the shock tower, like you're saying, versus you can grab the shock tower when the shock tower is exposed with a Bruggy Body. So I do think there is definitely a little bit of a pit advantage. I'm sure there's some aerodynamics, and there's obviously been a ton of testing of why that body is faster on the track as well. But I do think it does give you an advantage in the pits.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, so you are just extremely, extremely quick at pitting. And I posted that video on TikTok and I was like, there's no way we're going to see a negative comment on this TikTok. Like, that's as fast as it gets. That's as good as it gets. But, you know, we still have some haters on TikTok. And I will say that if you go look at our TikTok, a lot of the people on TikTok aren't necessarily our C racers. So they may not fully understand it, but you still have your typical comments that are like, a guy could do it faster or something like that. So I don't know, just kind of what do you think when you see stuff like that?
Yeah, I've never been in this position where a video or any type of social media content involving myself has ever gotten this much attention. I know, like, compared to the rest of the world, that 3 million is not a lot, but to me, 3 million is a lot. And also having like 500 plus comments on there too. I just have over the last like 2 days, I've had so much fun just going through the comments and educating some of the people that are on there that are just genuinely curious about what this is that we're doing. And for some of the negative comments that we have, I think that it's really cool to kind of revel in the fact that you and I are very much in tune with the RC community. We know a lot of people. We've done this for quite a while. We know what we're doing. We know when something is said that's correct and what's not correct. And you know, some of these comments on here, that they're making these negative comments, but they're not educated on what's happening in RC, like especially what's happening in that video. Some people were saying how there's this one particular comment. It says, nobody seems to be impressed. Anybody can do that, but not everybody can make a sandwich. And I just started dying laughing. I was like, that was actually a pretty funny comment. And it's not, I'm not going to lie. But also, it's really rewarding to know that when I'm in pit lane and I'm surrounded by those pro drivers and their pit guys, and a lot of them are their dads or their, you know, their team managers or what, you know, owners of a certain team. Like, I'm surrounded by the most prestigious people in that pit lane when I'm doing what I'm doing. And to have Gord Testman next to me watching me, and, you know, just having Richard Saxton fist bumping me before the race starts, and having Joe Bornhorst next to me on my left in one of the Truggy pit stop videos and saying, that was really fast, you did a great job. And whenever I posted that video, I had Spencer Heckard's dad comment on the video that I posted and said, she's faster than me. And then having Ryan Lutz, of all people, be the one to record that video and send it to me for me to use. And I just, reading those negative comments, yeah, they're negative, but they're people that just are not in tune with the community like we are. And I just recognize that. And I think that we should just educate them a little bit more. You know, even though they're saying these negative comments, it's just either they're being a hater or they just don't know. And at the end of the day, these negative comments don't really matter. But for the comments that are positive or just curious and want to learn more, you know, I've been going through those comments and liking a lot of them and commenting for the people that are saying, like, where can I go to watch this stuff? And I direct them to RC Signup because, like, you can look at any state on there and see what races are on there. And just some of the people that are genuinely, like, they don't know what's happening. They don't know what's in the fuel bottle. They don't know what I'm holding. People watch and be like, wow, that was fast, but I don't know what she's doing. Oh, I was fueling the gun. Like, I was, you know, fueling the car. And, well, what's in the gun? Oh, nitro fuel. Like, just having fun with answering those questions and those comments is really entertaining to me. And also, a lot of those comments were referring to, like, NASCAR and, like, F1. Guys, and people were, like, tagging Red Bull, and they were also referring to Guido from Cars, Beat Stop, and it was really funny.
I will ditto that the RC community, I think in general, is pretty positive, so I'm going to go ahead and take a second to say thank you for everyone who supports us or listens to the podcast or slaps a Race Like a Girl sticker on your car or just has fun and is a friend to us at the track. You know, we don't do what we do because we think we're faster than everybody. We just want to provide a female perspective and show other racers that females can race too. You know, it's not that we're better than anybody else or faster than anybody else. And hopefully it shows other females that, you know, you can race or you can pit too. And the negative comments that are out there, I do truly feel like it's, you know, mostly people who don't race or don't understand RC racing. But that is why the podcast is called Race Like a Girl, because in racing in general, there is a stereotype out there that racing is not for women. And so, you know, if anything, it just motivates me to try to get a faster pit stop the next time or try to do better at the next race when I read comments like that. But I do also feel like there's some opportunity, good opportunity for exposure to our hobby. Keenan's always talking about how can we make video or get to television or things of that nature just to show people what RC racing is. And I feel like just what you're saying with the people who are genuinely curious about it and have never heard about it. I mean, if we compare TikTok versus Facebook, Facebook is mostly the people following me who are already RC racers. TikTok went viral to anybody. And so it's anybody looking at those videos, not just RC racers. And they're generally like, what is that? I've never heard of that. And so it is good opportunity to educate people. Well, it's RC racing. You know, this is where you can go. This is what you can do to get started. This is how it works. So yeah, I feel like there's a lot of good out of it too.
Yeah. I think so. I think just the RC community in general is very small, but it's growing. And I think there's a whole world to be explored, and there's a whole world out there that don't know that we exist. And I think it'd be so cool to, you know, get RC to be bigger and better.
Well, we definitely appreciate your time. I guess we'll go ahead and kind of wrap up. So what's next? Where are we going to see you next? What's the next race that you're going to? You know, you mentioned that Icebreaker is kind of the next big thing that you're planning as far as Indy goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the next big race that we're going to go to is DNC, which is at the end of next month. That is in Paris, California. I think it's just north of San Diego, if I'm not wrong. And then the following month after that, we have Nationals, which is in Arizona. And then the week after that, we have Icebreaker. So there's a lot of things going on within the next few months. And then we have some testing that's going on next week here in Texas. So we'll be going to Thornhill, A1, Indy, and all around the tracks here all next week. So we have a pretty busy schedule ahead of us. And then also during that time in which we're, you know, traveling for races on our own, I have, you know, races and series races at Indy that we've got to keep up with too and race at. So we've got a pretty big schedule over the next couple of months.
Well, we won't be at DNC, but I will definitely check in with you, probably even bring you back on for a DNC episode. And DNC, one of the reasons why I love DNC is because it's got some amazing coverage. So you can believe that it will be on my TV that entire week and weekend.
Yeah, it's not only they've got like big coverage, like Scotty Ernst, one of the best announcers in the business, is coming out and comes out like every year for DNC. And then Tyler Hooks, our roommate, is also going to be on the mic for Live RC alongside Scotty. And they're both going to be announcing the race. And then there's also the biggest competition in the United States that's going to be there. There's going to be people from out of the country coming to this race from like Switzerland. There are going to be people from like Spain and Italy and Australia, maybe. Like, there's people from all over the world that are going to come to this race because it's just gotten so big. So I'm super excited. I haven't been there in a couple of years because it's always so cold when I go out there, and I'm not very good with the cold. But it's Joey's new track, his permanent track, and Joey has always been a huge, huge friend. The community, and I've grown up with him since I was like 11 years old, and I just can't wait for the event. And his event Silver State, which is the first weekend of May, I believe, is the one race I make it a point to go to every single year because it's my favorite, which is in Vegas, by the way.
Yeah, if it wasn't for school, having to take off that many days of school, or it lined up in my spring break, I would definitely be there, no questions asked. But we're excited to watch you. Best of luck. Make sure you get us some video coverage.
I will. I'll have somebody do another pit video.
Yeah, get us some TikTok video from DNC. We would greatly appreciate that.
Yes, I would be honored to do that, and I will send you over all of the footage that I have.
All right, well, thanks for your time tonight, Katie. To the listeners, we hope you had fun checking in with Katie and Katie on this kind of catch-up SIC show. We look forward to talking to you on the next episode. So thanks, Katie.
Thank you so much.